Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
This is episode 290. Man, 290 episodes, guys. We are 10 away from 300. Speaking of 300, head on over to themasonicroundtable.com/300 to get your ticket to come celebrate the 300th anniversary of the United Grand Lodge of England right here in the United States at the George Washington Masonic National Memorial. It's going to be a great time. Check out that website for all the details. Now, last week we had a great episode hosted by our good friend and brother, worshipful brother that is, Adam Thayer, who brought us quite a few papers last week. And I had a great time listening to those as I was putting the episode together and reflecting on those pieces. So once again, I just want to give a big shout out to Adam Thayer for the short notice and to say thanks again for putting that episode together. We've got so much talent here behind this show, myself excluded from the list. Steve Harrison, Adam Thayer, Bill Hosler helps us out. Matt Dobrow, who handles a lot of our digital media sources and even puts together some study group stuff in his area, which is just great. And of course, Frater O, our other co-host, who comes on every other week usually. He's actually had moved to DC from the Boston area and he's been traveling a little bit, but we're going to have him back on the show here very soon. Brother Scott Duball was razzing me a little bit because he said that I must have lost track because the 10 for 10 has become 4 for 4 as far as the 10 questions for 10 worshipful masters. We actually are on track to get those going again. I feel I do owe you guys a little bit of an explanation, and that is essentially my childcare is on vacation. She is off enjoying sunny California, and we'll be back in a couple weeks. So things have been put on a little bit of a hold. It's been a little crazy because as you all know, we got a lot of responsibilities as Masons, and the top one is family. We will get back on that as soon as possible. I've got Brother Michael Blasius and Brother Steve Higdon. They are both sitting worshipful masters who will be on the program in the next few weeks. We've got John Ruark lined up to come on for an astrology show. He's been really busy, and of course, Frater O will be back on the program just as soon as possible. So one thing I did want to mention right off the top was I didn't know how many of you are members of the Scottish Rite Research Lodge. This latest piece that came out, Reprints of Old Rituals by the Scottish Rite Research Society, it's one by De Hoyos, is fantastic. If you guys get a chance to join that, go ahead and do that. And if you haven't picked up your copy of this red book yet, Reprints of Old Rituals, you gotta do it. It's really, really fascinating. I'm a little bit more than a halfway through it, really enjoying it. Definitely go pick that up. Also in the news, I received an immediate press release. This is actually a press release that they sent to me just recently from February 22nd, 2017. It says, South Pasadena, California. The editors of the Southern California Research Lodge's Fraternal Review publication are pleased to introduce the new and improved Fraternal Review magazine. This rebranded experiment proved to be a success, and we will now continue printing its colorful 16-page publication. We publish a monthly issue 11 months out of the year and supply it to 1,300 subscribers all over the country. The Fraternal Review is constructed by the officers of the Southern California Research Lodge, SCRL. This all-volunteer group is happy to invite you to share the top Masonic books issue with my podcast listeners. After the many inquiries by both new and old Masons on the Masonic books they should be reading, we gave in and decided to create a list. With the help of our readers, along with prominent Masonic authors and scholars, we took a poll. The top Masonic books, as voted by Masons, has now been published. This is the first time in our 60-plus year existence that we have ever created such a list. Please feel free to discuss, debate, and share this asked-about list with your listeners. We plan to revise it with a new poll in 5 years. Enjoy and thank you for spreading the importance and value of Masonic education to the world. So this came out, and they sent me the issue, and this issue actually came out again back in September of 2016. However, I've been in a lot of communication with the Southern California Research Lodge as of late. I have read quite a few of their pieces because I became aware of them. Somebody sent me a bunch of their issues, and I found out that they had been promoting our show here within the magazine. They were also promoting the Midnight Freemasons. They were promoting the Masonic Roundtable. Just a fantastic thing. They would showcase a little advertisement along and how it was attributed, or how it went along, rather, with the current issue. And it was really cool. And so I thought I'd check out a couple of their articles, and we have been reading those on some of the episodes. It's a really good magazine. I asked if I could actually join the Southern California Research Lodge to get the magazine, and they said, unfortunately, it's only open to Masons of California. So kind of bummed out about that. However, because they are so cool, maybe every once in a while I can grab an issue and we can share what it has with our listeners here, with you guys. And I think I would like to go over this list of the top Masonic books with you, and we can kind of talk a little bit about those. And please, again, feel free to discuss this list on Facebook and tell me what you think. So as I'm looking through this, it's necessary to tell you that the top Masonic books cover story, the article is by Worshipful Jeriel C. Smith, and they gave him his top 10 picks. But then also is the top 10, which were voted on by several people. So Worshipful Jeriel Smith's top 10 Masonic books are, I'll start at number 10 and work my way up. Number 10, Sanford Holst's Sworn in Secret, Freemasonry and the Knights Templar. Number 9, John J. Robinson, Born in Blood, The Lost Secrets of Freemasonry. James A. Tressner, But I Digress. John L. Cooper III, The Questioning Mind is a Salient Characteristic of a Freemason, Alan Casalo, ED. Number 6, Rex R. Hutchins, A Bridge to Light, A Study in Masonic Ritual and Philosophy. Number 5, Daniel D. Hrinko, The Craft-Driven Lodge. Number 4, Cliff Porter, A Traditional Observance Lodge, One Mason's Journey to Fulfillment. Number 3, W. L. Wilmhurst's The Meaning of Masonry. And number 2, Andrew Hammer, Observing the Craft, The Pursuit of Excellence in Masonic Labor and Observance. And number 1, Arturo de Hoyos's Albert Pike's Morals and Dogma. Now, of that list, the books I actually really like on this list, I do enjoy Born in Blood, I like Observing the Craft by Andy Hammer, Morals and Dogma, of course, those three really stood out, but even more than Morals and Dogma, I think Rex R. Hutchins' A Bridge to Light, A Study of Masonic Ritual and Philosophy is probably the most valuable book out of that grouping. This is my personal opinion. A good list for sure. As for the books that were voted on, here they are. At number 10, The Origins of Freemasonry, Scotland Century, 1988, by David Stevenson. It says the author is Emeritus Professor of History at the University of St. Andrew in Scotland. He has the distinction of being the first non-Mason to present a paper to Cator Coronati in London, the renowned research lodge that has published annual transactions since 1886. Subtitled Scotland Century, 1590 to 1710, this pioneering book has become the foundation for many subsequent studies on the history of Freemasonry. It challenged the narrative of many Masonic scholars that modern Freemasonry got started in England around 1700 by presenting a large body of evidence demonstrating that elements of modern Freemasonry were developed in Scotland by 1600. Number 9, The Mason's Word, published in 2013 by Robert G. Davis. Now, this book was interesting because Brother John Ruark, Brother Jason Richards talk about this book frequently on the Masonic Roundtable. The description is as follows. Brother Davis is a well-known Masonic author and speaker, a past president of the Philalethi Society, and a fellow of the Scottish Rite Research Society. This paperback and ebook is a masterful synthesis of the origins and development of modern American Masonic ritual. A summary on the back cover is the author investigates where and when the ritual words originated, how the ceremonial forms of Freemasonry's degrees evolved, who penned the beautiful words that make the Masonic ritual, and how the language of the fraternity has been transmitted orally from one generation to another, yet remained intact for three centuries. Number 8, A Pilgrim's Path, Freemasonry and the Religious Rite, published 1993 by John J. Robinson. The author was not yet a Mason when he wrote this study of Freemasonry, focusing on its deniers, denouncers, and would-be destroyers, in particular America's largest and most vocal Protestant denomination, the Southern Baptist Convention. The first half of the book examines and refutes their anti-Masonic distortions. The second half expounds a true picture of Masonic philosophy and practice. Comparing Masonry to its religious critics, Robinson says, quote, "The simple truth is that Masonry does not recognize all religions as equal. To do so would require making a careful investigation, evaluation, and judgment of all faiths, which Masons have never done. Instead, Masonry reorganizes the equal right of all men to worship God as they see fit. Religious zealots abhor the concept of the free and equal right to worship according to one's own conscience. They often eliminate it by law if they succeed in getting political power in areas where there are no constitutional safeguards for individual rights." The quote from page 174 to 175. Number 7. The Meaning of Masonry, published in 1922 by Walter Leslie Wilmhurst. The author was a British Freemason whose writings focused on the spiritual or esoteric side of the craft. He was a Christian mystic, but for the most part wrote from a universalist perspective. This book was very well received in Great Britain and the US. An excellent edition, published in 2007 by Plumstone, has updated the original to modern English, with explanatory footnotes by Brother Sean Iyer, editor of the Philalethes, the Journal of the Masonic Research and Letters. The author discusses the deeper symbolism of the degrees, focuses on the instructional purpose of Freemasonry as a counterbalance to what he saw as an overemphasis on socializing and philanthropy. Quote, "Masonry offers us in a dramatic form and by means of dramatic ceremonial a philosophy of the spiritual life of man and the diagram of the process of regeneration." Number 6. The Builders, A Story and a Study of Masonry, published 1914 by Joseph Fort Newton. Joseph Fort Newton, 1870-1950, a clergyman, was a prolific writer and editor of religious and Masonic books, the original editor of the Short Talk Bulletin, often the source of articles in our Fraternal Review. He wrote many of them himself between 1923 and 1929. His best-known books are The Great Light in Masonry, a celebration of the Holy Bible that was featured in our April edition, and our number 6 book, The Builders. This deeply spiritual and philosophical book is divided into 3 parts. 1. Prophecy, Foundations in Architecture and Faith. 2. History, From Freemasons to Accepted Masons to the Grand Lodge of England. 3. Interpretation, Masonic Philosophy and Spirit. The first American edition, 1910, became a Masonic classic, so much so that an illustrated McCoy edition with additional materials was published in 1930. The most recent paperback edition, 2010, is shown in our photo. Number 5. Observing the Craft. In this reviewer's opinion, without having read every single one, this is the perhaps finest book available on the restoration of observant Freemasonry and the purpose and value of its practice. The author, Andrew Hammer, president of the Masonic Restoration Foundation, is among its most informed, enthusiastic, and articulate advocates. He describes its essence thus, quote, "Observance is as much a state of mind as a set of actions. In fact, each helps the other reach their maximum potential. The things we think and the philosophical attitude we cultivate as regards to Freemasonry and its associated concerns will influence and improve our actions in the Lodge. The actions we perform in the Lodge, when done well and to a degree of proficiency, aid the mind in maintaining its disciplined state in ritual and introspection. The goal to be achieved by this activity is a high state of concentration on exactly those things we find in the craft which enable us to be that better man. It is a deliberately contemplative union between the mind and body which enables us to take the result of that union into the soul." Page 12-13. Number 4. The Craft and Its Symbols, by Alan E. Roberts. This 90-page book is one of the best introductory volumes on Masonic symbolism. It is simply written, with many illustrations. The author begins by noting that, quote, "Symbolism is the lifeblood of the craft. It is what distinguishes Freemasonry from other fraternal organizations. It is the principal vehicle by which the ritual teaches Masonic philosophy and moral lessons." End quote. Brother Roberts goes through each of the 3 degrees, briefly portraying the meaning of one symbol after another. He explains key lessons to be learned from the words of the ceremony. He discusses the symbolic meaning or moral teaching associated with the items in the lodge room, such as the pillars, altars, Tyler's sword, and deacon's rods. He throws in a little Masonic history. He shows how all of this relates to a man's everyday life, to building character, At times, the listing of symbols is almost like a dictionary. It's dry reading, but can serve as a reference work to be reviewed after each degree is experienced. There are also inspired moments, especially when there is acknowledgement of the spiritual values that Masonry teaches. Brother Roberts, 1917 to 1997, served as master of two Blue Lodges, two Research Lodges, and as a Grand Lodge officer in the state of Virginia. He was a past president of the Philalethi Society, the oldest independent Masonic research body in the U.S., established in 1928. He wrote 25 books on Masonic topics. Number 3. Morals and Dogma by Albert Pike, 1872, annotated by Arturo de Hoyos in 2011. For the Southern California Research Lodge's number 3 book, we turn to a critical review of this 144-year-old Masonic classic by a member of the Scottish Rite Research Society, Giovanni A. Villegas. It is well worth reading. The author's opinion is that most readers would get more out of Rex Hutchins' A Bridge to Light, number 13 in our poll. Though unabashedly critical, many of Brother Villegas' criticisms are well taken and are balanced by recognitions of true Masonic merit. Any Mason with a genuine interest in Masonic scholarship should have de Hoyos' annotated edition in his library, preferably next to Pike's original. The following paragraphs are adapted from Villegas' review. The complete title of the book is Morals and Dogma of the Ancient and Accepted Scottish Rite. It is a massive tome first published in 1872 by the Supreme Council of the Ancient and Accepted Scottish Rite of the Southern Jurisdiction, United States, America. In its original printing, it was 861 pages long with an index of 218 pages. The chapters are arranged in the order of the Scottish Rite degrees themselves and provide a broad philosophical and historical context for the lectures and symbolism of each degree, while containing none of the actual rituals and secrets. Thus, it is available to the general public. The contents include comparative religion, philosophies, etymologies, and even numerology. The primary themes are the secrets or great mysteries of ancient Egyptian, Phoenician, Buddhist, Hindu, Judaic, Sufi, and Christian belief systems used unrepentantly throughout the book. Purists may prefer to read Pike himself, but they may wish to consult the annotated edition by Arturo de Hoyos. It has the exact texts of the original, with annotations on the original sources, texts and contexts, something which the original version lacked yet so desperately needed in the first place, thus making it easier to cross-reference. It also includes a new glossary, bibliography, and index. It is also illustrated with many of the images from the original sources Pike had before him when he prepared the original. If you are a Scottish Rite Mason, then Morals and Dogma, by general consensus, is considered essential reading. However, if you are among the vast majority who find the book difficult to comprehend, the next best thing would be to read Rex Hutchins' A Bridge to Light instead. It has many of the main elements of Morals and Dogma condensed within its pages, and it is presented more understandably. Although Morals and Dogma arguably had very little to do with the early degrees of the Scottish Rite, it cannot be denied that the religions and philosophies contained within the book do share the same goals and aspirations of the Rite and of Masonry in general: the betterment of the individual and society through a personal and collective desire to progress toward moral perfection. Number 2. Freemasons for Dummies by Christopher Hodapp, 2005. Despite its unfortunate title, the Southern California Research Lodge's number 2 book, Freemasons for Dummies, by Christopher Hodapp, is well deserving of its popularity, as it is one of the best overviews of Freemasonry available. Its light, readable style and comprehensive scope and division into convenient categories provides an excellent introduction to the fraternity, is useful to the curious public as well as to the Masons new and old. No doubt this is why this is one of the 3 books recommended in the California Grand Lodge's Entered Apprentice Candidate Guide. Given the fact that the majority of the SCRL's members are California Masons, it should not be surprising that all 3 of those recommended books made our top 10. The other 2 are Wilmhurst's classic, The Meaning of Masonry, number 7, and Stevenson's The Origins of Masonry, Scotland's Century, number 10. Particularly useful to the new Mason is Worshipful Hodapp's clarification of just what quote-unquote secrets of Freemasonry he is now bound by oath, quote, never to reveal to any non-Mason, which are described as, the grips or handshakes, passwords and signs, the gestures, that are modes of recognition, and some detail of the Masonic degree ritual ceremonies. Also of great value throughout are his many distinctions between fact and fiction, mythology and history, critique and slander. His chapter on politics and religion is both a celebration of Masonic tolerance and justification of our practice of excluding discussions of these topics from our lodge meetings. This book, in fact, explores to at least some degree the subject matter of nearly every book that appears on the ballots submitted in responses to the Southern California Research Lodge's Top 10 poll. Moreover, in keeping with this pattern, followed throughout the vast, quote-unquote, for dummies book genre, Worshipful Hodep includes his own version of the quote-unquote parts of 10. It includes lists of Masons prominent in 10 categories, a list of conspiracies, anti-Masons, and hoaxes, refuting each of them, and finally a top 10 list of Masonic places to visit. You will search in vain for the promised list of 10 common Masonic phrases, which was omitted by the publisher. However, it can be found online at http://members.aol.com/hodep/fmfd.html. The appendices include such valuable documents as Anderson's Constitutions, the legendary Regis Manuscript, and a list of Masonic Grand Lodges. And the number one book, of course, Born in Blood. Published in 1989, The Lost Secrets of Freemasonry by John J. Robinson. Not only was Born in Blood the highest rated book in our poll, it had the most first place votes as well as being named on the highest number of ballots. Thus, it was decisively our top book. In his introduction to A Pilgrim's Path, Robinson says that the early response to Born in Blood was that, quote, not even one newspaper in the United States saw fit to review a book that had the word Freemasonry in the title, end quote. That changed, and the book became the highest-selling book on Masonry for the next 20 years. Its place atop SCRL's polls testifies to its continued popularity. Excerpts from a review by Brother John M. Hamill in Ars Quartor Coronatum, Volume 104, 1991, page 239-240, I had thought that Masonic scholars at least had convincingly debunked the theory, more properly, legend, that Freemasonry had its origins in the medieval Knights Templar. The legend persists, however, and seems to have an eternal fascination for non-Masons. The book under review is by an American author who is not a Freemason, who has produced a book which is, on the surface, persuasively argued and a rattling good read. Therein lies its danger. As the author states, his original intention was not to write about either Freemasons or Templars, but to satisfy his own curiosity about certain questions arising from the Peasants' Revolt of 1381. The first half of the book discusses the situation in England, the Knights Hospitaller, and the revolt itself. In the course of his researches, he discovered evidence for a very shadowy secret society which led him on to consider the Templars, their fate, and the origins of Freemasonry. He posits the theory that the secret society was an inner circle of Templars or Hospitallers who eventually became the founders of Freemasonry. Turning to Freemasonry, he examines the rituals of the three craft degrees and looks for links with the Templars throughout Masonic language, a fair enough approach had he gone to the basic sources for ritual. Regrettably, the author used his text not the early Masonic catechisms and exposures, either English or French, but a 19th century American exposure by M.W. Redding's The Scarlet Book of Freemasonry. In so doing, he found a number of examples to bolster his theory, examples which are peculiar to that book and do not appear in either of the early English ritual texts or the modern English rituals. It is a great pity that this book cannot be wholeheartedly recommended, for it performs one extremely valuable service for Freemasonry. The author gives a devastating critique of the late Stephen Knight's The Brotherhood, which caused so many problems for English Freemasonry in the 1980s. That critique becomes even more devastating and valuable when one knows that its author is not himself a Freemason and has no necessity to defend Freemasonry, but is a man of integrity who dislikes uncalled for, dishonest, and fanatical attacks on any human institution which is based upon principles and has the intention of being of service to mankind rather than serving selfish self-interest. The present reviewer finds himself in a quandary. The book is a good read. It has many positive things to say about Freemasonry, but unfortunately the basic thesis is seriously flawed. Read with care, and preferably after reading of Peter Partner's excellent study, The Murdered Magicians, the Templars and Their Myth, the author has done a service to Freemasonry. I fear, however, that he has also given an additional source to the religious detractors of Freemasonry who will quote him out of context and use the Templar myth to claim that Freemasonry is an alternative to or subversive of religion. So that was the entire top 10 list. The magazine goes on to list a little bit further some of the information about the author of that number one book. And if I can find a PDF version of this, I will of course include it in the show extras on the app. Now up next, I've got a couple really cool things. We have illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison, who's going to come on and give us a Masonic Minute, followed by my good friend and brother, Scott Duball, who wrote an excellent piece, and I had him read it for the show. So we'll go ahead and get right into those.
The life of worshipful brother Charles Gloyd was both short and sad. By most standards, brother Gloyd should have had a successful and productive life. A soldier in the Union Army, he started his career as a school teacher and went on to become a physician in Holden, Missouri. There, in 1867, Dr. Gloyd organized and became first master of Holden Lodge 262 in Johnson County. That same year, Brother Gloyd's mother began caring for an infant living with a young girl named Carrie Moore. Charles and Carrie met through that relationship, fell in love, and married on November 21st, 1867. After only 10 months, their marriage broke up on September 27th, 1868, before their only child, a daughter, was born. Unfortunately, Brother Gloyd had a secret. He had been hiding his dependence on alcohol. His alcoholism devastated Carrie, and the marriage began to fall apart almost immediately. When she ended things, Gloyd told her, "If you leave me, I will be dead in 6 months." The prediction came true. Brother Gloyd died of chronic alcoholism in 1869 at the young age of 29. The rocky marriage, divorce, and Gloyd's death left Carrie's life in ruins. Knowing what was at the root of the problem, it also left her with a seething hatred of alcohol. She didn't think much of the Masons either, since she felt those scallywags had contributed to Gloyd's drinking. Trying to pick up the pieces, in 1874, she married a minister 19 years her senior. Better than her first, her second marriage was still no bed of roses. She became obsessed with doing something about the problem of alcohol, which she still felt had wrecked her life. Taking the bull by the horns, so to speak, on June 7th, 1900, she stormed into Dobson's Saloon in Kiowa, Kansas, and screamed, "Men, I have come to save you from a drunkard's fate." Before they could stop her, she smashed Dobson's liquor supply and did her best to turn the saloon into a pile of splinters. Now using her second husband's name, thus began the lifelong rampage of America's most notorious teetotaler, Carrie Moore, better known as Carrie Nation. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right. Always a great piece with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison. If you get a chance, hop on over to our website, wcypodcast.com. Check out the bookstore in the links there, and go ahead and click on those links to some of his books. Those just take you to the Amazon bookstore and allow you to purchase them there. We don't get any kickbacks or anything from that. Those are just links to the books written by gentlemen who have been on the show. And so next, I think I saved the best for last, and that is my good friend, worshipful brother, Scott Duball. He was our first 10 for 10 master, and he's written some pieces for the Midnight Freemasons in the past. But he always takes time to write and contemplate and reflect, and this was a good piece that he put together, and I just found it to be absolute in his reasoning. So, without any further ado, Blue Lodge First by worshipful brother Scott Duball.
Blue Lodge First by worshipful brother Scott Duball. When it comes to the appendant bodies, I often hear the phrase, "Blue Lodge comes first." In fact, before I can develop a well-thought-out response to a new Mason inquiring about the appendant bodies, this line comes careening across the room, every time. I'm not going to argue with that point, as it holds some degree of truth. However, when I hear this phrase, it is used to mean something different. What may sound like Blue Lodge should always come first progressively transitions into Blue Lodge should be the most important thing to you and completes its evolution as you shouldn't do anything else if you aren't doing Blue Lodge. That's right, the Scottish Rite steals members, the York Rite steals members, the Shrine steals members. I take exception to this position. The problem is that the thought allows the individual Blue Lodge, or those espousing the aforementioned belief, to expect you to participate without providing you something in return. The belief is propagated in order to require you to come to stated meetings, participate in degrees, and perhaps to learn lengthy lectures, all of which, I admit, are laudable. You are admonished that your duty is to fulfill whatever needs your lodge may have. These duties include sacrificing church to volunteer at pancake breakfasts, sacrificing tucking your children in to perform the charge for the evening's degree, or sacrificing most of your Saturday off for additional ritual instruction. Where this becomes unhealthy is that we, as individual members, lack the same expectation of our lodges. We do not believe that our lodges owe us anything in return. We do not expect the lodge should be providing us with some fulfillment as well. By saying that the 3 degrees, and a few pancakes, should provide you with everything you need, we assume that the only thing you could ever need is to watch the same ritual performed in the same way that it has been for over 200 years. That is not fair. You can make the claim that you learn something every time you see the degrees, and I would agree with you, but remain firm when I ask, that's it? It's unfair to Masonry to pit the Blue Lodge against those brothers who enjoy appendant bodies. We don't lose active brothers to the appendant bodies because those brothers have their priorities wrong. It's quite the opposite. We, the Lodge, have our priorities wrong. The appendant bodies provide opportunities to their members that the Blue Lodge do not. The Blue Lodge teaches one set of philosophies and almost never expands on them. You don't become a 33rd, KCCH, or KYCH by exclusively attending Blue Lodge. The appendant bodies also offer occasions to interact outside of your own lodge. These are likely flaws with the existing model of many Blue Lodges. I am sure you have all heard this sentiment before, but I can assure you that it is not part of every lodge. Blue Lodges with thriving membership don't hold this belief, and they certainly don't verbalize it. Thriving lodges provide their membership with reasons to show up and be active. They do not need to guilt their members by suggesting that their first responsibility is to be present. These lodges treat Masonic philosophy as living, progressing, and ever-evolving such that it requires constant discussion within the tiled space. These lodges have a genuine expression of appreciation for those dedicated to the craft and its teachings, and these lodges are never short of diverse interactions among brothers. The appendant bodies know that they must provide something to justify your participation. Your time and your priorities belong to you. How you choose to spend time away from home and family is completely your decision. Sacrificing time from your non-Masonic life should be worthwhile. If you are giving up time with your spouse and kids, you have every right to expect to get something out of it. I admit that I am a member of my lodge because I wanted to be worshipful master. There is truly no more or less to it than that. This period has been extremely fulfilling. A time where I will no longer receive the fulfillment of being master is on the horizon, and I will be in search for new fulfillment. I constantly wonder if I will find it in my lodge or someplace else. To suggest our lack of participation is anyone else's fault but our own is myopic. It appeals to our own insecurities, but it is far from true. Craft lodges and appendant bodies should both seek to prioritize the fulfillment of their members. When we use guilt to force members to stay active rather than giving them what they are seeking, we do the gentle craft a disservice. My wife and I are expecting a baby girl in August. Is the chance to deliver a lecture we have heard 100 times worth time away from her? Will running a Facebook, Eventbrite, or WordPress campaign be worth diverting focus and energy away from her and my wife? To be clear, there are Masonic organizations that make these trade-offs worthwhile. It's a matter of who can deliver them, and quite honestly, no amount of reminding me that Blue Lodge comes first will factor into that decision process.
All right, I hope you enjoyed that. Probably did not go in the direction you thought it was going to based on the title, but I think his thoughts and his reasoning were really good. So I really hope you guys enjoy it. The paper that will go up on the Midnight Freemasons is kind of a preview. You'll hear it here first, but that'll go up on the Midnight Freemasons in the coming weeks. Big thanks to Brother Scott for recording that. Sounded great. And with that, we're gonna end it for this week. So if you could, please help support this program by going to wcypodcast.com and clicking on support the show. In that drop down menu, you'll see a link that says buy a pin. Please go ahead and click on that and purchase one of our pins. It helps support this program. Every dollar goes right back into it. And if you don't want a pin, go ahead and check out where you can shop and use our promo code WCY, which will allow you to get 10% off and the people you're buying from, either onitlabs.com or buybankersbest.com. Throw a little bit back to this program. Additionally, if you just want to donate via PayPal, you can do that too. I did want to quickly mention that we have some dates coming up where I will be doing some presenting. So of course, at the end of this month, I am speaking at MasonicCon in Attleboro, Massachusetts. It's going to be huge. It is going to be on the 29th of April, and I invite you all to come out. It is a free event. I will be doing a talk on colonial Freemasonry, and we're going to blow the lid off of some topics. It's going to be amazing. Some never before seen things will be seen, and I guarantee you're going to be really excited about it. And then going out towards June 7th, I will be speaking in Jefferson City, Missouri. June 21st, I will be speaking in Columbus, Ohio. And of course, on June 23rd, 24th, you can catch me in Alexandria, Virginia, where I will be with the Masonic Roundtable celebrating with all of you the 300 years of organized Freemasonry. So it's looking to be a really fun time. Again, if you are interested in that, go to wcypodcast.com and click on the 300 years of Freemasonry celebration, or go to themasonicroundtable.com/300. If you like Masonic podcasts, again, check out the Masonic Roundtable. We go live every Tuesday at 10/9 Central. I've missed the last couple weeks. I've been pretty busy, as I explained at the beginning of the show this week. And if you dig Masonic papers and research, then check out the Midnight Freemasons blog at midnightfreemasons.org. We publish 3 articles, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and it's a great place to go to grab some Masonic education for your lodge if you're looking to discuss or read a paper one day. They're right there, and the site actually is a really good mobile site and utilizes the reader technology on Apple devices even. So you can tap the reader button and all of the screen will just go to white and black texts, and it will look really nice for you, and you can just read it right there in lodge. But that's it, guys. I hope you enjoyed the program this week. Again, I do apologize for delaying on having some certain guests on, but it will happen. I won't let it go away. It's too big and too cool of a segment, so we'll finish that out soon. And with that, I'll talk to you all next week. Stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.